Hey guys, for Mental Health Awareness Month of May, our conversations for the next three episodes revolve around various aspects of mental health. And this is a topic we've talked about often on this podcast, including five episodes in May of last year. You can go to seacoast.org/mental health for a full list of the episodes in which mental health is the center of discussion. Also wanted to let you know that in the show notes, you'll find a few resources that may be helpful if after listening, you feel motivated to seek help or talk to someone. But right now, I'll say, take it away, my friend and fellow staffer here at Seacoast, Alexandra Hunt.
Hey, this is Alexandra Hunt, and you are about to hear my experiences of struggling with eating disorders. You'll hear a story of what happens when a person doesn't prioritize mental health, self-esteem, might not know how to prioritize that, and definitely does not fully accept that what God created, He created with intentionality, with love, with delight even. It's so easy to forget to live from a place of remembering that we are fully loved and fully known by our Creator. It's easy to slip into those destructive habits that we all have and know all too well. Throughout my experience, I've learned that I'm more than what I eat or don't. My feelings are liars, and self-respect, not self-obsession, is good and healthy. Just like alcohol abuse, gambling, obsessive people-pleasing, eating disorders are never the actual issue themselves, but symptoms of a deeper, hidden, hard issue of demons waging war against you. Healing, grace, forgiveness, guys, these are things I'm still working on daily. I really hope that my story brings you hope. I hope it makes you feel less alone in whatever your own personal brand of struggles might be. I hope it motivates you today to take a step toward wholeness and healing. Even if that step is as simple as embracing honesty, that recognizing, you know, maybe I'm not okay. That's a great first step, and it's the perfect place to start.
Just because I don't believe or agree doesn't mean I can't learn from you.
Why did you have to bring that up?
Okay, that one I'm super embarrassed about.
Do you like me?
Do I like you?
Yeah.
As an individual or
as a person?
No, I like you.
Okay, cool, yeah. Cool.
And I don't have any interest in appearing to be stronger than I am.
I ain't bowed to Nebuchadnezzar's statue. He gonna lead. You feel me?
How do we love people who see the world differently than we do?
What would it look like if we truly loved all of our neighbors? Could listening to their stories be the first step? This is Seacoast Church, and there's way more to talk about.
All right, so here's the predicament that we're in. We're all friends. And we like, yes, we are.
Define friends.
We joke around a lot. I also trust you guys. And when I'm with people I trust, I can get silly and jokey about mental health stuff because I feel like I have that right because I have gone through hell and back with my own personal stuff. But this isn't necessarily a laughing matter. So here's what the next 3 weeks look like. This week, we're going to touch on some things. Keep it lighthearted because there's some heavy stuff coming your way. After we talk a bit on this episode, you'll hear from a fellow staffer of ours, Alexandra Hunt, who has had significant challenges with an eating disorder. Very appreciative of her honesty, as I'm sure you all will be too. Then next week, we are going to talk suicide, just the four of us. None of us are experts, but we're going to talk through some discussions along those lines. And then the third week, Roy and I are going to sit down and talk to Chip Judd for him to mentor us on some mental health stuff, but mainly through his telling of 2013, he had a bad bout with panic attacks and anxiety. And so Chip was gracious enough to share that. And then don't forget, last year, all of May, we had mental health series, anxiety roundtable. I share my story, my mental health crisis. We had Toby Slough come on to talk about kids and mental health, had a couple of guest therapists. But this is, like I was saying, how I trust you guys. I remember you and I were texting back and forth, and I made a joke. I think something along the lines of saying how sad I was. I don't remember the context, but I thought it was clear that it was a joke. But you, as a friend, texted back and said, I have to ask, were you serious? Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I do remember that.
And Roy, you know a lot about, you know, my story and everything. And Lynn, I guess a little bit.
Yep.
So let's have some fun. I want to talk some PC culture and some like appropriate and inappropriate matters.
Why every time I do a host segment, you always open with stuff like, I'm going to read you guys a series of jokes, and I just want to know if you think they're racist. It's never just like, how was your day?
How was your day, Jack?
I don't want to talk about it.
These are real questions that I'm actually very curious about. Is it appropriate for someone to say, if this person is not
Jack
shaking his head. No. Just,
if you have to ask.
If this person does not struggle with bipolar disorder, is it inappropriate to say just casually, oh my gosh, I feel so bipolar, I can't decide, blah, 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 blah. Like just a very casual, everybody knows what that person meant. Why are you looking at me like I'm kidding?
No, I'm thinking about it.
Okay. Good. So you're tracking.
I am.
You're tracking. So this person doesn't struggle. They just say it flippantly. And they're saying, I'm really confused. I can't make a decision. Or lightheartedly labeling themselves as bipolar, just using that word. Like, is that, would you say that's inappropriate, Roy?
No, I wouldn't.
You wouldn't?
I've made that joke before.
Yeah.
About myself.
I wouldn't either. And I think, you know, like, obviously, if you know that there's someone in the room who struggles, it's probably not, probably like insensitive, and you would probably self-censor, but just the joke in itself, no. And, you know, I remember this is like back in high school where a bunch of friends hanging around, someone made basically that same kind of joke, and but it was like about asthma or something. Like someone was breathing real hard, and it's like, oh, you got asthma? And someone else just said, my friend died of asthma. And it's like, okay. Well, it's like, because, and the reason that's irritating to me is because it's not about your friend, you're making it about you. Like, that person made that about them. They weren't actually asking for sincerity. They wanted to, like, look at me. And, like, that's what irritates me about that kind of stuff is it's just, like, there are people who will, like, kill jokes and they hate jokes and they really want it to be about them. And what a good person they are for not having made that joke.
Yeah. See, I think I'm a little more conservative here, and it's not a sensitive issue, but I think if you are with a group of friends where everybody kind of knows everybody's heart, you're close and everything, I don't care what you say, honestly. That's your friend time. You can say whatever because you all understand each other. But I would say maybe with something like this, it would be really important to avoid saying something like that around a bunch of people that you don't know, just because somebody may be like, man, I really struggle with that. Now, I'm not the type that would be super sensitive if somebody said, oh my gosh, I'm so depressed today. Oh, well, I struggle with depression. Why would you say that? That's not me. But I do think that there could be some people that would be
sensitive. Of like a lighthearted. And I think some of it boils down to like in your case, they were making, y'all were making a joke. Some people just say things like that. I think I've most of my life have kind of been flippant with that with OCD. Like I like things a specific way and I'll be like, oh, I'm so OCD over that without even thinking about it. And until I was, you know, until recent years, I never knew anybody who had OCD and really struggled with that and the anxiety that came from that. And so I just said things flippantly when someone who's struggling with it, and they may not never say like, Lynn, don't say that because I struggle with it. But internally, it might put them in a position of like, this isn't a flippant thing and you're just using it in a normal conversation. So I don't know. I think it boils down to like every idle word we say is going to be judged. So it like, but that's something I've had to consciously not, because I, all my life I've been like, oh, I'm very OCD. You can't use my pen because I'm OCD. And I think that even happened in our office. I lost my blue pen. I could not find it. I was freaking out. And then it was in Jack. He's like, oh, is this your pen? And I was like, nobody knows that I was freaking out about this pit.
Yeah, and I know someone currently who is struggling greatly seeing their father struggle through bipolar, and it's really wearing on them. It's very emotionally taxing because it's like real serious. And so if I were to hear someone say that in front of the person that I'm thinking of right now, I'd probably after the fact say, hey, okay, you didn't let that mess with you. And I do think most people would agree that personally that wouldn't be offensive. Like I wouldn't be offended by this stuff. All right. So am I taking it up some notches?
Uh-oh.
What are you, schizo? I'm serious. These are things that people say. Like, did we just up the ante? Or Jack, you would say,
well, I just like if it's straight, if it is
some more.
A stray comment, a stray joke, I think that everyone can stand to lighten up a little bit.
Yes,
I would agree. Yeah.
Because like for me, like I make jokes all the time. Okay, it's like I made a joke to Roy over Teams a couple weeks ago, and when I made it, I'm like, all right, like there's a chance this could irritate him. I think it's funny enough to take the risk. But also, like, if it had made you retired, I would be like, I'm real sorry, man.
Yeah.
Like, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think that part of it's like, I don't want to hurt anybody. And if I was in a larger group and I found out that, you know, I, you know, kind of made a flippant remark and it bothered someone, like, that would bother me. But I think, like, so, and I don't want to over-spiritualize it, but, like, one of the things about the weaker brother, stronger brother stuff in the New Testament is the greater burden is on the stronger brothers, but the weaker brothers, one of the things Paul says to them is basically like, look, like, don't make everything miserable for other people.
Like, he doesn't use those exact words, because otherwise that's kind of the
thing is, it's like the, you know, don't constantly put these burdens on other people. But the onus on the stronger brothers is, hey, go out of your way to make sure that you're not causing your weaker brothers to stumble.
Right.
And so I think, like, if it's a stray comment in a large group, like, we can all lighten up. Like, I think you should have the self-awareness to know no one is trying to hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
And even if that did hurt, like, sometimes, you know, I get bugged by stuff that people say, but if I know it's a stray comment, I'm like, look, they weren't trying to, they didn't mean anything by it. They weren't trying to hurt me. And I tried to just move on.
But what about a both and? Intent does matter, so you should tell yourself that person did not mean any harm by that, but also, why not be careful with the sort of words that we use, because somebody may be in a place where it's tougher to hear. Here's another one.
Oh, no.
Here's another one. You need a therapist, man. But it's jokingly, like, come on, man. You need a therapist, man. What's wrong with you?
First of all,
you
need to talk to somebody.
Really?
Have your friends ever been like?
I've heard that one.
Man, you need to talk to a professional, man.
The truth is, we all do.
I know, yeah. I know. But to me, it's fueling maybe a stigma of, well, what's wrong with that? Because it's kind of said in jest as a put down. Again, I'm personally not offended by this stuff at all.
Sounds like you're offended, Joey.
I love that. It's like, I love that joke. Like, the, like, letting someone
he loves it.
Letting someone rant about, like, listening to someone rant about something really inconsequential, and then just going, sounds like you need to talk to someone about that.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I think that's funny.
Yeah.
And because the whole point is not, hey, you need therapy. The point is, like, you care way too much about this one thing. So, but here's, like, again, it's like situational. If because I just think, like, with guys, if your group of, like, close guy friends find out you struggle with something, I hope you're ready to be made fun of about that for the rest of your life. But it's like, that's part of the, like, guy relationships are just, you're going to be given a hard time. And if you don't have any guys in your life who give you a hard time, you don't have any friends.
So women can't have those sort of
dynamics.
I don't
know what they do.
They're just not strong enough.
I'm not going to speak to that. I'm an idiot. I'm a moron, not an idiot.
So I lied. I think we're going to take a step down on this one. But this is something that a lot of the, can we call them PC police? The PC police are saying that you can't say stuff like this anymore. Like, Roy, it's right there, dude. Are you blind? Like, some people are saying, you can't just do that. There's real blind people that you could offend.
I just...
Lynn, we know what Jack thinks. Like, would you say, yeah, that may be something that we should think about? Or would you say, no, that's, come on. We all know that all you were doing was saying, Roy, come on, it's obvious. It's right there. What, are you blind?
I don't know that that's a, I probably have said that.
You would never say those things in a public setting.
Yeah. Like, or there would, yeah.
You would never say those things in a group of people that you don't know. But in a group of people that you know, where you clearly know that there's nobody in the room that's actually blind. Yeah, I mean,
see, I think I would for sure say that in any context, and I don't know if that would be okay or not, but, like, I would totally say that, not even thinking about who. I mean, because that's to me, that you're making a comment about whether or not somebody can see something. It's not even a joke about a blind person, you know.
The only public, actually, because I was thinking that the only public instance where that is said a lot is actually, like, sports games. And my view is that referees deserve all of the abuse that is heaped on them. So nothing is too severe.
All right. Well, that's the end of all the lightheartedness of this series on mental health. Was that light? What did you say? That wasn't lighthearted?
I was making fun of you.
Oh,
I mean, you took things that could potentially be lighthearted offensive.
Yeah, that was the lighthearted part.
That was the lighthearted part. I want to ask you, Lynn, I do realize that men can struggle with eating disorders too, but I think that it would be a little more of a common thing amongst women. did you ever struggle? And I didn't tell you I was going to ask you this, so you can say skip and delete. But did you ever struggle with like major body image issues, eating disorders, or anything like that growing up?
I never struggled with an eating disorder, but I mean, I think body image is something that all, I hate to say all, but yeah, people struggle with, girls struggle with. I mean, it's middle school and high school specifically, that like it was like my weight was, I was always conscious of that. And it didn't help, like, depending on what you were involved in. And so in middle school, I was a cheerleader. And so there's always this, like, you know, you're battling with it even when, and you have a distorted self view anyway. You could look in the mirror and be fine and think like, oh, should I do this? And so I never had an eating disorder, but I know lots of people who did. But yeah, body image is something that I've always like battled with, but not to a degree that it was incapacitating or affected my health.
Yeah. Have y'all, are y'all familiar with the Carpenters? Y'all are all old enough to know the Carpenters, right?
The Singers?
The Singers, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The brother and sister duo. Yep. Y'all know she died of anorexia. Did y'all know that?
Mm-hmm.
I did not know.
Really?
That.
Y'all didn't know that? Wow. Yeah, it was one of those things to where she was in and out of getting help. But once she really decided, hey, I really have to go after finding health, it was kind of too late. Like her body had already started to shut down. But super sad. But there was a made-for-TV movie, and I actually, we watched it as a family in the Simpson household because I wanted our household to be educated on, you know, just how crazy mental health sort of stuff can be, because it was irrational. Like you can actually watch her on TV taking interviews and she is skin and bones. And here she is thinking that she is, you know, overweight. Well, right now, our very own Alexandra Hunt, I want to read a scripture as a tribute to her courage to open up about this. You'll hear that it's not a struggle that she considers all packaged up and in the past. And so my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses and insults and hardships and persecutions and difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. It's Alexandra Hunt.
Yeah, been a crazy season.
Oh, yeah? You want to get into that right now, just why it's a crazy season, or we'll save that for another day?
Well, we're kind of half and half living in Charleston and living in Indiana right now.
Tell me about that. So you grew up in the Midwest in Indiana?
Yep. Indiana, the Hoosier State.
Tell you what, tell me how you ended up at Seacoast, and then I'd love to know why you guys are living in two different places.
Yeah, so I've always loved the Lowcountry ever since I was a kid. And when I got married and my husband and I were talking about just what we wanted our lives to look like, I had shared this was before marriage, but I had just shared, I love it down there. And we went down there together because he'd never been to Charleston or Savannah. And he just fell head over heels. And we kind of just started praying of like, all right, God, it's a crazy, amazing story that I can tell today, or we can save it for another time. But the way we got to Seacoast was 100% the Lord.
Let's hear it.
The medium version, we'll do that. My husband was the kind of guy who he loves Indiana, like just to his core. He is an Indiana boy, man.
Yeah,
he's a man,
yeah.
You know what I mean? and oh goodness, we were talking about moving and he was like, I don't know. Like he didn't want to be more than 15, 20 minutes away from his parents' house, my parents' house. And it just was really on my heart of like, I don't know. I really feel like we need to be open to maybe venturing outside of Indiana. And to be fair, I'd lived in Denver, Colorado. I'd lived in Nashville, Tennessee. So like I'd been a little bit of a gypsy soul there. Sure enough, there was one night we were praying before bed. So we'd been kind of tossing around the idea and he called an audible and he's just like, you know, God, wherever you want us, if you want us in Charleston, if you want us in Timbuktu or Africa, like just whatever you want, we're game for. And I was just looked at him and I was like, what did you just do, sir? And because in my experience, bluffs of faith, God always like has called.
Yeah.
And I've walked those walks and in a good way. It's always been amazing. But calling you up into that courage that you're like trying to teeter on. Anywho, it was one open door after another. I mean, we put our house on the market and our realtor called us the morning it went live, our house here in Indiana, you know, and she's very conservative on pricing of, hey guys, I really think we should go in. It was either 30 or 50,000 higher
then it was in the middle of the crazy real estate boom. And we're like, okay. And that night we got a cash offer as is, asking price. They wanted to close like quickly, as in they wanted to close the day. It ended up being the day we were scheduled to move to Charleston. They wanted to close the day before that. Yeah. His dream company that he wanted to work for had his exact dream position open. And just the timing, everything was just one thing after another. All that being said, we weren't sure if we wanted to be in Charleston or Savannah. We really loved Beaufort, but we also knew that we wanted to find a church first and then anchor. We wanted to find a church and anchor our lives on that church and then figure out, because we'd been commuting 45 minutes to a church here. We found Seacoast. I had a whole spreadsheet of like different beliefs and values. And, you know, do they believe in communion, baptism?
You're that type. You're that type. Not everybody puts that stuff on an Excel spreadsheet.
Yes, I am a spreadsheet girl. And honestly, Seacoast just like ticked all the boxes, except we started watching churches in the South online from our living room, because it was during 2021. So everybody was pretty much doing online services after COVID. And it was during the At the Movie series. And we watched it and we're like, oh, that's pretty cool. But we'd never heard of At the Movies. We were like, is this how they always do church? I don't know. Maybe this church isn't the one for us. We come to Charleston to do a visit to make sure, like, cause we didn't want to move their sight unseen. He'd never been down there. We do a visit. We're there for one Sunday and we're like, all right, Charleston to Savannah to Beaufort. Like, where are we going to church? What are we doing? We came to Seacoast and we were like, oh my goodness. As soon as we walked in the doors, you can just feel the Holy Spirit moving and alive. It's like, I kind of joke that the Holy Spirit is just in the vents, like just in the air around. And we both were like, there's no question, this is our church, which was funny because we didn't want Charleston. Like, we wanted Beaufort, we wanted Savannah. Charleston was like, we'll drive through Charleston just for the sake of like ticking the box, but like, we don't want to be in Charleston. And then Seacoast it changed our entire future in the South.
I'm glad that you guys are here, but I wish more people didn't want Charleston because it's getting too crowded here. You know what's so neat about your story is I bet you so many people say the same sort of deal, because my wife and I had a similar experience in 2002. You know what I'm saying? So 20 years before, we stepped into Seacoast thinking, you know, we're looking for a church that suits both of us, and had the same sort of sentiments. Wow. It's neat. I guess the Holy Spirit's been here for a long time. Hey, so I'm pretty sure I volunteered at the Chosen Conference with you and Tim Smith and the cafe, and actually the bookstore, correct? Did I do a good job? Did I have a good work ethic?
Oh, you were incredible. Not saying this to like blow smoke, but we actually put in a request after. We're like, hey, if Joey ever wants to volunteer over here again, like, can he be our priority volunteer?
Yeah. Because
you were awesome. That goes back to your childhood, right? Didn't you work in a store with your dad or something?
I worked at Family Christian Store or Family Bookstore, or whatever it was called. So I did a good job taking the clothes hangers back to the back and bagging things and all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's great.
It is really neat, though, because Seacoast has become such a large staff. It was like, I'm meeting you for the first time. I didn't even know who you were. It was neat to get to know you because, you know, Mr. Tim and I go way far back. So I appreciate you having this conversation. We're spending a couple of weeks talking about mental health. Chip Judd, he's going to share about his bout of anxiety and panic disorder that happened, gosh, I guess like 10 plus years. And I sent an email out to, I think it was staff. You got it and you responded that you'd be willing to talk about eating disorder. Is this hard to talk about?
Yes and no. It's not something that I've been very vocal about until here recently. Even talking to my husband about it, he's actually the first person that I had talked about. And that was more out of him observing things and noticing things, saying, for Pete's sakes, Alex, just eat. Like, and I was like, what do you mean? I am eating. I'm eating so much food right now. You're like, you're eating like a bird. No. And it was like, that kind of opened my eyes a little bit to like, and that was when I thought I was doing good.
Gotcha.
Like, I genuinely thought, oh, I've beat this. I'm good. And then it wasn't until we went to meet with Pastor Adam Martin for marriage counseling last year. And
you have to get marriage counseling? I did too.
Oh yeah. Honestly, Side note here, if I could go back and change one thing about my marriage through the ups and downs, we would have been in counseling the day after we walked down the aisle. I mean, truly, yeah. I think everybody should do it.
I agree.
Especially with Adam Martin. A little plug there. He was amazing. He just nonchalant. I mean, you know how he is. He's just so gentle and casual and nonchalantly was just like, yeah, and almost, he didn't make the assumption, but he just like brought it up of like, I don't even remember how he said it. You've probably struggled with this, or have you? And just in a way that was very unassuming, to where it was easy to say, yeah, I have struggled with eating disorders without feeling any like shame or judgment. And it was like, that was the first time that I'd said that out loud. Cause like, I knew I had, but I hadn't verbalized that. And then as we kind of work through that and work through some things, and then working, opening my eyes a little bit to the fact that, and reminding me, I guess, that our stories aren't our, just our stories, right? They're stories of how God's working in our lives, and the shame around it, the silence around it, that kind of thing, that only serves to quote unquote protect me, but really it's an isolation lie, right? So then if I don't talk about it, then there's going to be somebody else who might have a similar story who thinks they're alone, or thinks that, oh, eating disorders are only for people who are stick thin. It was so yes, it's hard to talk about in the sense of it's kind of hard to go back to that while I'm still working through it all, but it's necessary. The church we're going to up here in Indiana, our pastor's doing a sermon right now. Actually, him and Josh Sherratt are like best friends, nice. Which is so funny.
Yeah.
We're also doing a sermon series on mental health right now. And Sunday he talked about how he was quoting somebody else, but he said, our messes turn into messages. And it's like, yeah, that's true. My mess is a message.
For sure. Well, it's still a big deal for you to share. And I agree that so many people are going to get a lot out of this. So you and I have interacted a little bit already about your story. So first grade, you talked about how you would not allow for your thighs to rest on your seat because you didn't want your legs to look fat in the first grade. Like, where did that come from? Did that come from just kind of how the world is set up and it media, TV shows, where your parents instilling that into you? I mean, where'd that come from?
Yeah, you explained that perfectly, which is funny because they were under my desk. Like, no one could even see my legs, but it was just like, I could see. And I was like, if somebody happened to look over and be like, oh, look at those fat thighs, which like, for the record, I was a tiny kid. Like, I was a beanpole.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
Like, I don't think I broke. Yeah. I didn't break 100 pounds until my sophomore year of high school. Like, people used to make fun of me because I was so scrawny and tiny, which I didn't take as offensive. I took as compliments of like, yeah, I am so tiny. But important context to all of this is I will be 30 years old this year. So my childhood was during the early 2000s. So that was like the Britney Spears, the Christina Aguilera's, the Kelly Clarksons, the pop stars who anorexia was cool. The supermodels were tiny. The jeans were so low that if you had any kind of natural stomach, it made you look like a little pudgy, and everybody talked about muffin tops. And it was just very like the only way. And the reason I specify the context for the time era is because there wasn't that body acceptance at that point in time. I remember my mom, who is a wonderful, like strong, godly woman, looked great. I mean, I hope I age half as well as she has. And I can remember her looking in the mirror and being like, oh, I just, these jeans don't fit the way I want, or I hate this part of me, or just having that negative self-talk, which of course as a kid, you don't recognize that's what it is. Or my dad with his health habits. And I just remember like, nobody was dogging on me. It was just more of, I was aware of my surroundings and like, okay, well, this is the standard, skin and bones, not like an inch of fat. Like, I remember watching TV shows even where like, if a girl could like grab her side and there was any pudginess, she like wouldn't eat, or she like, that was just cool.
That's so interesting. Cause hearing about your story before this conversation, I just assumed in the first grade, you were a cute little pudgy girl. and you're saying that, so this is completely irrational.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
But when I was growing up, the TV shows were all coming out of Southern California. Right. So you had that, and that was the ideal life. So it was friends who wanted the chunky highlights. It was the older girls in high school that you would see that you look at them and it's that reality. Would it be dysmorphia? Is that the word where like,
yeah,
you don't,
I think so.
What you're seeing isn't actually, and it'd be like, look at them, be like, oh, I'm bigger than them. And they're in high school. And it's like, you look at back at pictures and you're like, no, I wasn't. And so it's recognizing, like bringing the reality with the image that you have of yourself. And it took a very long time for me to be able to like see what was actually in the mirror and not look in the mirror and put a, like a circus mirror on myself, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. And it seems like this is something that it had a hold of your life. How early did you start your nighttime exercising? And my gosh, you were aiming for 800 sit-ups. Did you ever pull that off? I'm like, 800? Oh, yeah. You've done 800 sit-ups?
But you also have to think about this. We're adults and we're thinking of that as like, that's insane. Think of a little kid with like boundless energy and like elastic muscles that just can do anything.
I still think you're superhuman. 800 of like anything along those lines is pretty incredible. That's awesome.
It was, I would do eight sets of, that was my goal was but eight sets of 100.
Right. And I'm laughing, but that's horrific that little Alexandra had to put herself through that. And so when did that start? Did that start in the first grade?
So I didn't realize, and this is what helped when I was younger, I didn't realize my options. Like I thought I was just like stuck with this body that I had that wasn't even bad. Like, honestly, I was great, but I didn't know that there was something I could do about it until middle school roughly. And that's when I would have the insecurities on both ends of the spectrum. It was, so I grew up at a fairly large school and then moved halfway through high school to a very rural school. So I had kind of two polar experiences, and at the larger school, like everybody was smart. Everyone was an athlete. Everyone had six packs. They could do like 20 pull-ups, and we got tested on pull-ups in gym. I remember I could do all the other tests, but I could never get a pull-up during the test. I could do three or four outside of like, as long as I wasn't being tested. I was so cripplingly insecure. And that's what it all goes back to, is it goes back to this crippling insecurity that fed itself or showed itself through the exercise, through the eating, through the not eating, through the types of friendships I had, through the self-respect I had and what I was willing to do and not do, and just all of that. But then at the same time, not really anybody knew, because I was also highly involved in youth group and in church and volunteering in children's ministry. So it was easy to kind of hide and easy to do that. But the exercising, that was, it was this push and pull, because I couldn't meet the metrics that my friends could meet, because like I said, I was a scrawny little beanpole. So I felt weak and like pathetic. But then at the same time, it's like, well, but if I lift weights too much, then I might get bulky. So it's like, do I try and keep up with my friends, or do I try and keep up with what I'm supposed to look like? And it was just a mental mess.
Yeah. All along, you know, God is just like, just rest in me, young child. You don't have to, you don't have to worry about any of this, you know? Were your parents, I went through tons of mental health issues as a kid that my parents were oblivious to. And it wasn't that they were uninvolved. They were very involved. But if you don't open up to your parents and tell them, they're just not going to know certain things. Were your parents completely unaware?
No, yeah, they didn't. They were very involved, very protective, great parents. But no, this was something that I think I knew that if I talked to them about it, they would do something and put a stop to it, which meant then I was going to be accountable for it. Not that I put this thought process through as a kid, but like looking back on it, it's like, yeah, of course I didn't talk to mom and dad about this. One, I was scared I was going to get in trouble for it, because I was just always scared that if I moved one wrong foot, I would get in trouble, which was, again, me going back to that hyper insecurity. But again, I don't know that they even would have known. And I don't remember ever having a conversation with them about it. I haven't asked them as an adult. They're like really resurfaced the topic too much, because it's something that I still kind of struggle with and I'm trying to, I don't know. It's interesting. So short answer, I don't think so. I do remember one time they caught me doing the sit-ups and came in. They're like, what are you doing? Like, I'm just doing some sit-ups. Go to bed. And like, it was like a, come on, quit. You're fine. Go to bed. And I don't remember it being much more of a thing than that. But also like that just told me I needed to be better about hiding it.
Yeah. Why don't you describe kind of the day-to-day at its worst? I don't know if it was in college when you would consider it, that, you know, the worst that it got.
Yeah, it was definitely college. I was honestly, so my freshman year, I went to Indiana University on I was supposed to have a rowing scholarship for sophomore through senior. Freshman year was just kind of like, yep, make sure you're worth your medal kind of thing. And that was the whole reason I went to IU, was because of this scholarship. I mean, who would turn, especially somebody who's cripplingly insecure and felt like they were never good enough their whole life, who would turn down a Division I Big Ten scholarship? Like, no one, right? Especially when you come from a family who likes sports or life kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So anyways, I was at IU. I had to figure out what to eat, and I was trying to fuel my body to keep up with the Big Ten workouts and the just like that rigorous Division I training schedule. But also I was putting on a lot of muscle, and like my, I remember like even this shirt that I have on, it's just a button up shirt. Probably, well, this one might've, but button up shirts wouldn't fit my arms because I just got so jacked like I was supposed to, because I was a college athlete, and that just really messed with me. And then it became, what do I even eat? Like, how do I figure this out? So it became a lot of trial and error. And then at the end of my freshman year, right before the spring season starts, which is like the big rowing season, which by the way, I didn't row previously. They recruited me out of basketball. So
just side note
there, that was a crazy
little
jump.
The scholarship was for basketball?
No, the scholarship was for rowing. Oh, they recruited me out of basketball.
Gotcha.
So I really had to prove my mettle there because I'm like, I've never rowed before.
Gotcha.
And I always have not, like, I've never felt good enough. I've had all this insecurity. So now I'm trying to prove that, like, yes, you should give me this scholarship sophomore through senior, and freshman year is where you kind of prove that.
Gotcha.
And
oh my gosh, so you had to be jacked. Your biceps, your triceps. I mean, rowing. Holy cow.
Oh, six pack, jacked triceps. I was like, man, if I only this body size was like four sizes smaller, I'd be great. But anyways, I got injured during our training program and actually had a broken leg because of like a stress fracture that got so bad that I just kept pushing through that ended up pulling me out for a couple months. I worked my way back. I earned my seat back in the boat. I competed at Big Tens, and they kept promising me the whole time, like, oh, your scholarship's fine. Your scholarship's fine. We're still good. Big Tens ended, went into the meeting, like all excited, ready to sign the paperwork. And they were like, well, we've decided to give it another year and we'll see where we're at next year. And it was just devastating. It was like, sacrificed, like I felt like I had sacrificed and surrendered my control over my body to make it what they wanted it to be, which I already had that, those body issues. And then it was like, on top of that, I came back early from the injury for the sake of like proving that I was committed, and it just knocked me down. And so from there, it was like, why even exercise? Like it, I had this twisted mentality of like, I'll show them I'm not going to exercise anymore. Like I'm transferring from IU. I'm just going to quit exercising. I'm going to eat what I want, as if me being unhealthy, they cared in any way. You know what I mean? So it was just this, it was just so much hurt and so much like validation of all of those fears of like, you see, you really aren't good enough. You really like, no matter, you did the best you could and you still weren't good enough.
Gosh.
And it was just, it was devastating mentally, physically. And after that, I put on, I don't know exactly how many pounds I put on, but looking back at pictures, I'm like, girl, like, what were you doing? Mm-hmm. And both sides, one of like that temptation to be disgusted with myself because of that internal struggle of like, oh, what were you doing? But then also that, oh, honey, like, I just want to go give her a hug.
Right.
And be like, it's okay. And I bet I didn't exercise at all for a solid year. That was the one thing I could control. It's like, they made me exercise to the point of injury. So it's like, fine.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it. Ugh, Joey, I was so messed up mentally of like, I was not okay.
Right.
Like truly the summer to summer, even looking at pictures, summer after I graduated high school, I was on the county fair queen's court, like role model for little girls, healthy, fit, like just in great shape, to the next summer of like, oh my goodness, girlfriend, you swelled up like a tick. Mm. Like, what is going on? But it was that, and it was in the back of my head of like that, if I don't exercise, I'm going to gain weight. But then there was almost that, well, you know, maybe that's just my destiny. Maybe I'm just going to be overweight the rest of my life and unhealthy because that's what a lot of my extended family is.
Yep.
And that's just, maybe that's just my lot in life. And this is where it starts kind of thing.
Yeah. And so now we're in territory of you definitely legit were overweight and unhealthy. Is that safe to say?
Yeah.
And so when did the binging and forcing the food out, when did that start? Mm-hmm. And would we call that full-blown bulimia?
Honestly, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't want to pretend to be an expert in eating disorders. I can only speak to my own experience. What I can, probably, somebody else might say that, who knows more. But I would say that, yeah, I was going to school full-time. I was working full-time in the hospitality industry, crazy hours. So sleep schedule was off. Dietary habits were off. I was exhausted. I was stressed. My mental health was garbage. And it was like, I got to the point where I was like, I'm just going to, I justified it by my life's so crazy. I'm just going to eat what I can. And then that regret would happen of like, oh, there would be times I would be coming home from working at the JW Marriott in Indianapolis at like 2 a.m. and I had not eaten and I was so hungry. And I would stop at a steak and I passed two Steak and Shakes on my way home. And there was like a couple months there where I would stop at one Steak and Shake and get a full meal and then keep driving and be like, I'm still hungry, and stop at another Steak and Shake and get like a couple extra fries or chicken tenders or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was like, even as I was doing it, I felt disgusted with myself of like, one, just from a normal healthy standpoint, like that's not healthy, but also from that, like, no, skinny, like stay fit, stay healthy of like, what are you doing? Right. Like, what are you doing right now? It was a mess.
Yeah.
But that was when I would get home and I would be like, what did I just do? I need to get this out of my system. And then I would make myself throw it all up. And then it would just was this downward spiral of this cycle of eating, throwing up, not eating anything. And it was kind of all into living together, right, of I just won't eat today and I'll make up for overeating yesterday. Or, you know what I mean? Like, right, it was just kind of everything going together.
Your whole life centered around this, it sounds like.
Yeah. And the eating disorder wasn't the issue. It was the self-image, the insecurity, the like low self-esteem. And it manifested in so many different ways outside of just the eating disorder. And it's like, looking back now, I'm just like, oh.
I've done this before when I have reflected on my younger version, struggling with depression and anxiety and all of that. Have you gone through like a grieving process that included like a empathetic grief for your younger version? Like, I feel so bad what that little girl had to endure. Have you had feelings like that?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Because I mean, you mentioned depression and anxiety. That was running my life.
Yeah.
The mental health side, not that eating disorders isn't mental health, but it's like, that's how the mental issues manifested physically.
Right.
That's the best way to say it. The mental issues I had were manifested physically through the eating disorders, especially like working with younger girls and being around younger girls, whether it is mentorships or whether it's volunteering in youth ministry or that kind of thing, just hearing, even in my own family, cousins, younger sisters, just anything of like hearing people talk about themselves, it breaks my heart and it makes me want to cry because I've been there. And I wish I could go back and tell my younger self of like, hey, you're loved. Mm-hmm. Like, just believe that what God created, He created. You weren't a spare part, or you weren't something that was just like left over or an accident. Like, He took the time to create you. Like, that in and of itself should change the narrative.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, yeah, sometimes.
Yeah. And I've even found that posture is pretty therapeutic for me. And I think the first step in me understanding, you know, self-love, like Jesus says, love others as you love yourself, but it really didn't click. What does loving myself look like? I think my baby steps into that was thinking about the younger version of me and really grieving what I had to go through. And that younger version still kind of resides in me. You know what I'm saying? Like, all that stuff is still there. So yeah, it's a deep, profound thing to do for sure. When you started to, like, you actually said that God opened your eyes, I think you said in your marriage is when things started to turn around. Like, what was there, like an aha moment? Is this when your husband clued you in? Like, how did things start turning around?
I would love to say that I was like humble and open and like just so receptive to my husband's comments. That's a lie. I totally blew him off. I was like, listen, if you like what you see, then you just need to suck it up because this is what it takes to have like to look like this. And I did look good at the beginning of our marriage. And it was like, okay, whatever. Kind of blew him off of like, you just don't get it. You don't get what it's like. And it really wasn't, because I thought I was in a good place. I really did. Like, I had lost the weight. I had learned that I don't have to kill myself in workouts. Like, I had so much growth. I mean, seriously. And I was in such what I thought was a good place. Like I said, he tried to like, hey, you know, you got to eat more than chicken and celery. Like, because, you know, celery, negative calories. And that just would be my main meal. Not good, by the way. anybody listening, don't do that. Like, don't I'm not do giving that. You ideas. It wasn't until we started trying to get pregnant and we had a year of just no success, not even like a glimmer of hope. And we were at the doctor. She was just talking about like, well, you know, you have PCOS, which is polycystic ovarian syndrome, which basically means that a lot of things, but one of them is that you don't ovulate. And it's like, okay, which historically that's seen in like morbidly obese women historically. Here lately, in the last 5 to 7 years, it's been very prevalent in young, healthy, what should be highly fertile women. So that's a whole other thing. She's like, that you're not, no wonder you're not getting pregnant. You're not ovulating. Let's go on the hormones. And it was like, all right, let's do the hormones. Still doing the same eating plan I was doing. It was either drastically there, because there's still that still in my life. Not so much now as often, but that, oh, let's just binge. Let's just have a fun, good meal. And then that regret, and not necessarily the expelling what you eat, but more of the, I'm going to work out like crazy to make up for it kind of thing. We did the hormone pills and all of that. And it just was a mess. We stopped the hormone pills. We actually ended up getting pregnant a couple months after the hormone pills. And we were so excited. Unfortunately, that ended in a miscarriage. A couple months later, we had another miscarriage. And it was after the second one that I was like, this isn't working. Something is wrong. Like, what can I do? Because those were just excruciating physically, mentally, emotionally, just, and it was just horrible. It wasn't until I started learning, because it was around that same time that I started learning about pro-metabolic eating and how it's the biggest misconception about metabolism is that it slows down as you get older, when in reality, age and metabolism are just, they happen to coincide. It's not because of each other. And how if you're feeding your body what it needs, the way God created it, then your metabolism stays healthy and you don't go through that slump, or that slump is easier to adjust to. And just learning all of these things of like, well, what does my body actually need? Time out. It needs more than 800 calories a day. What? That's crazy talk. Or, oh, it needs more than chicken and celery and salads, mm-hmm. which I didn't eat salads because I felt like I had to. I genuinely have always loved salad. But it's like, oh, salad's really hard to digest. What are you talking about? Or, oh, I've always avoided dairy. I've done the oat milks and the almond milks because dairy, like, one, it does upset my stomach, but two, it's like, oh no, dairy's a big no-no. It's like, oh, my body actually needs dairy. Like, so just all of these things of learning this, it was like, no wonder my hormones are out of whack. And not that it's all because of this, but it was, that was the aha moment for me, was learning about the metabolism and the way our bodies were created of like, oh my gosh, God created a, it's amazing. I don't have to fight against my body. If I give it what it needs, it operates the way it's supposed to for the most part. Cause you know, we're in a fallen world. Mm-hmm. So our bodies are still a little jacked up. But that was the big aha moment, was after the infertility issues, so much so that we actually went to see a fertility specialist. And this was all when we were living in Charleston full time. They ran every test, they did everything, and they found what they thought was the cause for it. Like, oh, we think we see it on the ultrasound. This is the cause. We went in for the confirmation test because, you like, insurance purposes, you have to have this step in order to fix the issue. And we'd seen it on the screens. We go into this last test, and I forget what it's called. And my doctor was like, well, that's weird. It's not there anymore. Like, and it was like a formation thing. It was like a heart-shaped uterus. It's arcuate is what it's called. And it's like the septum was gone. And she's like, nope, that's not the cause then. And at that point, Josh and I were both like, Josh is my husband. We were like, okay, God, you are making it very clear that there's not, because she told us, she's like, the whole fertility industry is based on getting pregnant, not staying pregnant. And all of that was such a wake up call of like, okay, God, you are the giver of life. You are the one who is going to bless us with children if that's in your plan for us. And if not, make us okay with that. But I'm going to do everything I can to hold up my end of the deal, right? So I'm going to feed my body the nutrients that it needs. I'm not going to starve myself. I'm not going to exercise to the point of just complete exhaustion. I'm going to do exercises that are good for my muscles and that help set me up for successful aging and that kind of thing. And that whole, I know this is kind of a long tangent, but that whole mindset shift was like, that was the game changer.
That was a good tangent. I caught you saying something, and I wonder how significant it was. And Chip Judd, who's on here a lot, he told me that his practice is that he doesn't compliment women unless there's somebody else in the room. And I've got Caitlin back here, who's our sound engineer, and then all of our listeners. I wanted to, you said something about early in your marriage, you really did look good. I've been around you. You look good now. Like, do you believe that? Seriously, at this juncture in your age, when you look in the mirror, are you happy and proud of yourself?
I would love to say, yes, I am. But the truth is, it's still a struggle. It depends on the day. Mm-hmm. It depends on how I feel. It just depends. And that's not okay. And I know that's not okay. It's real and it's honest. And that's something I'm working on, because historically, I've only felt good about myself and how I look if it meets my unrealistic standards. Sure. So it's like working on accepting that and working on being like, you know, it's okay that something I'm working on is that if I turn around and I have like skin that touches itself on my side, that's okay. Like, it doesn't have to be perfectly flat stomach. That's just unrealistic. Mm-hmm. So thank you. That's so kind of you to say. And that's good, like, affirmation of like, girl, get out of your head. Mm-hmm. Yes and no. It depends on the day.
Yeah. And I really appreciate, I understand Christians' perspectives when they say this. I've heard a lot of Christians say, you know, I will open up about my struggles after it's all wrapped up into a bow. And I think there's good intentions there because they just want to be an encouragement to others. But I think it's so important to be open about our struggles that we're not necessarily finished with, because I mean, the reality is we are going to struggle with stuff our whole lives. And I wonder, do you think that you could liken what you deal with food? Like, my therapist told me the other day that her and her husband, they are alcoholics in remission. Like, they will always be in remission from, you know, and she hasn't touched a drink in probably 30 years. Would you say it's similar to you with food, that this is never just going to go away and be something that's second nature to you, that you just don't struggle at all? It'll always have to be something that you pay attention to. Is that safe to say?
You know, Joey, my first reaction when you started asking that question is yes, absolutely. It's something I'm always going to have to, but I think a better answer is no, because I think that's still giving it power. I think it's something I need to be aware of. And I'm grateful that my husband is so loving and supportive and aware of it with me, because he can help keep me in check with that. But that also means that and from my perspective in this and in my life, I don't want those generational chains to continue. Like, I want it to be something that I'm aware of and that I'm intentional about, but I want to, and that's what I'm doing is I'm trying to create. And that's what I've been doing, is trying to create a life where I have habits and I have routines to where I don't even, similar to like for somebody who struggles with alcohol, they're not necessarily going to go meet their friends at the bar. They're going to find a different location. Same kind of principle. Sure. Of, I see how this struggle has impacted, speaking just even to the women in the family, my grandma, my mom, my siblings, like my sisters, but even beyond that, it's like, I see how that is impacted throughout generations of the insecurity, the low self-esteem, the struggles with weight and size and body image and all of that. And it's like, I remember in high school, my mom was a smaller pant size than me, and not because she was unhealthy. She looks great. And that wrecked me. And I don't want that for my kids. I want to be very, and that's actually what realizing that connection is what made me want to start working on this, because I'm like, I don't want my daughter to hear me talk about myself like this. Not that I blame her. I don't. That's that. I hope that is not how that comes across.
But it's
like, I don't want my daughter to hear me frustrated. I want her to hear that there are things that I want to improve, you know, but I don't want her to be like, I don't know. I want that generational like demon and sin to stop with me. So that way, this is a very roundabout answer, but yes, I do think it's something I have to be intentional about for the rest of my life, but not in a way that it still controls my life and trying to avoid it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It does. Yeah. You would want your daughter growing up saying, Mom really cares about health and she cares about me being healthy.
Yes.
And whatever that means. And obviously that's what you have been learning your whole life of what true health means. All right. So we're wrapping this thing up here. I wanted to ask kind of an opinionated question. You know, I tell our listeners that we rarely come to the table with all of our thoughts ironed out, but do you think, so you're talking about the peak of your struggles was early 2000s. Here we are in 2024, where A, social media is a crazy, alluring trap for so many women because of, I mean, it's just insane. The sorts of things that you see every day as the ideal standard of what a woman should look like and all the filters and, you know, how celebrities present themselves and all of that. So you've got that working against people, but then it feels like we're in an age where there is less tolerance for body shaming. There is a wider door for varieties of different shapes and sizes and more acceptance. Like, do you think that we are living in a year or era where this is better for women or worse?
I think the pendulum always swings to the extremes before it balances out in the middle. And I think we've gone from the extreme skinny to like that's the accepted thing to there's a difference between empowerment and enablement. And I think it's important to empower women to accept the way that they were created and accept the fact that they were created. Like, I cannot stress that enough. They were created. I think that it is, I'm not going to say easier because that's easy to say looking from my perspective, from the outside looking in, I think it's different, but I also think it's a lot of the same. I mean, we talk a lot of, right, about how Satan's not creative. He's pretty freaking lazy and he uses the same things over and over. So it's the same trap with a different face. So I think not that it's easier, not that it's harder. It is just as much of a prison to believe that if you are just unhealthy and overweight and not honoring your body, not respecting yourself. And I'm not talking about, like, God made bodies of all shapes and sizes and he did it on purpose. So I hope that comes across. But using that as an excuse to not be healthy, I think is the pendulum swing in the other direction right now. Does that make sense?
It does. Yep, it does for sure. This was great getting to know you more outside of the bookstore. And I mean, way deeper, way more profound, just your sharing and your willingness. You know, I think about Paul's words. He says that he boasts in his weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest upon me. And I think that you doing this just swings that door wide open for the Holy Spirit to even give you more power. So I appreciate you sharing. It's going to be of great benefit to everyone. I know it was for me. So thank you so much, Alexandra.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you for talking about this. This is not a popular or cool thing to talk about. And there's a lot of stigmas and a lot of misunderstanding around it. So thanks for shining some light on it.
Yep.
You've been listening to the Things You Won't Hear on Sunday Seacoast podcast. In the show notes, you'll see a link to our Facebook group page. Also, we'd love for you to consider subscribing so you get these episodes downloaded right when they come out. If you enjoy the podcast, we'd love for you to give us some love by rating us on iTunes or Spotify. We now have video versions of these episodes on our Seacoast YouTube channel for those who enjoy listening and watching. Thanks so much for listening.